October 1992, and this tape is prepared to talk to Alex Taylor of Flukeborough, who I hope later today is going to tell me something of her childhood growing up in Cark and Flukeborough.
Her fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Yes, well, it seems to be... Okay, Alex, that seems to be working all right. I wonder if we could start off by asking you what your earliest memory of childhood was, your earliest conscious memory.
I think my earliest conscious memory was my early days when I lived at Birkdort in Tabithwaite, which was my father's home. Mm-hmm. He was in the army, and he was serving in Ireland, and my mother and my brother and I lived at Tabithwaite for a time. Then we moved to Kent's Bank, mm-hmm. where we lived at the old farm at Kent's Bank, which was cut in half by the railway. I've forgotten its name now.
Yes.
And I can remember my father, who was then stationed in Lancaster, and he used to come home by train and throw a joint of meat into the garden. He then took the train, then took him on to Kent's Bank station, and by the time he had walked back, the dinner was being prepared. Then we moved. We lived for a short time at Roasted, which is in Cork.
Yes, yes.
And there, I managed to fall into the fire and burn my hands.
Oh dear.
But it was a lovely place, and with the beck running through the garden.
Yes.
And I remember that with great pleasure.
You hadn't gone to school. This was before you were at school.
This must have been before I went to school. Yes.
Yes. My
father then built the house, which is now the Borage at the South Lakeland Garden Centre.
Yes.
And he had the garden, his market garden, which was now on the site, which is now Fairfield.
Yes,
housing.
Yes.
He also owned some fields round about, and he had a beautiful garden round our house. I didn't go to school until I was 12.
Really?
I had a governess at home.
Really? Well, you must have been one of a small group of people who...
Well, it was quite customary for what we would call middle-class people in those days.
Yes.
The village school was considered to be very rough and ready, and I had a governess. My memory was of great pleasure, but I don't know whether I learned a great deal. I read a great deal with the governess. I learned no mathematics at all. My father was a great naturalist, and mm-hmm. I knew a great deal about that. But as far as the village was concerned in those days, I grew up rather frightened of the village children, because they regarded us as snobs, because we didn't go to the village.
You wouldn't have any ready-made friends if you hadn't been to
school. We had a lot of friends in the district round about, and we used our bicycles, but they were similarly like ourselves. I shared a governess with various people. I went to one house where I had a French governess.
Yes.
And so we had friends, but not within the village. And I regret to say, as I say, we didn't know a lot of the village children very much, but I did know the village adults.
Yes, yes.
The village children, rather, as I say, used to tease us a great deal.
A bit combative, yes.
And there is one gentleman whom I know very well now, who I was very frightened of when he was about 13, and he managed to push me off my bicycle and so forth, and another gentleman who one day got hold of my rabbits. I bred rabbits, and he borrowed my rabbits.
Yes,
and I had to go down and be very fierce and get my rabbits back. Now the little red light, oh yes it is, James,
yes.
It is. But otherwise, the older people I did know very well, and we used to go out with old Harold Manning, Jack Manning's father, used to go out on the sands with him on the cart and go out fishing. We enjoyed that very much and watched the various things that went on with the fishing.
Yes, yes.
it was interesting. We also thoroughly enjoyed going round the farms, and we had great contact.
Why did you go round the farms, Alex?
I think we enjoyed it. I think we go.
Was this a free enterprise amongst your children?
Complete freedom as children in those days. We had our bicycles. No one worried about us at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we were free to go anywhere we liked. We particularly enjoyed threshing time.
Yes.
There were two old men who lived rough most of the year, but they always came into the district to help with the threshing, and they were great pals of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We went mushrooming and blackberrying. And when we reached the age of about 10, we used our bicycles a great deal. My father had he was a very keen fisherman, and he had a boat, a small rowing boat on Windermere,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we used to camp on the side of Windermere in the place that's now known, which is now the YMCA National Camp.
Oh, the North Camp, yes.
The North Camp.
Yes.
And we used to go out, we used to go camping. My father always picked the time very carefully when the mayfly were.
Oh, so what they call Duffer's Fortnight now.
Duffer's Fortnight,
yes.
And we would go fishing. That was a great pleasure. So those were my very early childhood, before I went away to school.
Before you get away to school, could you tell me something a bit more about your governesses, Alex? Did you have a governess entirely to your family, or did you share? Did you go to somebody else's house?
No.
Or what?
The governess I had, we had her to ourselves for a time, my brothers and I, when we were very young.
How many brothers did you have?
I had two brothers.
Yes.
My older brother went away to school when he was 7, to prep school. And then my younger brother didn't go away to school till he was 9. And
yes,
we had this world governess. She is... She died some years ago, but her sister still lives opposite me now.
Mm, how nice.
And we were great. She was.
What was her name?
Her name was Kelly, Phoebe Kelly.
Phoebe Kelly, wow.
And her sister, Mrs. West, lives opposite
yes,
me now. She's one of the Kelly family,
yes,
and they lived at Ellol, which was the old
yes,
house up there.
Yes.
It's been very much enlarged nowadays.
Yes.
But that's where they lived. And she taught us. But I did share her with the Dickinsons, the Dickinson family with the 7 boys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
John, who became the great historian.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, the rest of the family were very, very keen on horses.
Yes.
And I shared a governorate for some time with Bernard and Robin, who were the younger in the family.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
And but I don't feel that we took the lessons very seriously in those days. And
were you conscious of this at the time? Did you have a sort of playful attitude to your governess, or were you in terror of your governess, or
did
you regard
it
as a distraction?
We called her Bill the Lizard.
For
some reason or other. So I was out of the story. She was always known as Bill, and it was from the story of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we called her that. She was rather tall and thin,
mm-hmm,
and perhaps that's what we called her. But we weren't in play. No, it was interesting. She had some guidance in teaching us, because my mother used to receive publications from the PNEU. And, of course, that was based in Charlotte Mason College.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I don't think our governess, I don't think she was ever trained at Charlotte Mason. I think she came to us more or less straight away from being at the grammar school. So she
yes,
was quite
but you sure. had a one-to-one tutor.
Oh, yes, one-to-one tutor.
Yes.
Not, as I say, I read an enormous amount. I was very interested in history. I was very interested in nature studies, because my father was very interested,
yes,
and she was. Arithmetic and maths just left me cold. I did a certain amount of French with a French governess. I shared with my cousins over in Haverthwaite.
Yes.
But that was my education.
Mm. And then you went away to school when you were, what, 12?
I was 12. I went away to school, and I went to George Watson's Ladies' College in Edinburgh. My mother was a Scot, and she felt that Scots education was far superior to anything yes. in England, and I went there, and it was a very academic school, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and so consequently I was regarded as almost illiterate, except, of course, that I had read a great deal more than most of the girls had.
Yes. Did you feel at a disadvantage when you first went?
To a certain extent. I don't remember really feeling very disadvantaged. I knew a lot of things the other girls didn't know. Yes. And so maths lessons were pretty terrifying,
yes.
because I didn't know them. But I obviously, I obviously knew more French than they did.
Yes.
And I enjoyed the other language. I enjoyed Latin very much. I loved English. I loved history, but of course, being Scotland, we learned almost quite permanently English. Certainly, some disadvantaged in the fact of having had private, individual attention. I found to work in the class difficult to begin.
How many other girls were in the class?
Well, there were about 30. It was a big school.
Yes.
It was now. The school was. In the centre of Edinburgh,
yeah.
in George Square. It was a lovely old house which had originally belonged to Admiral Duncan of Camberdown, beautiful old house.
Mm.
It's now the psychology department of Edinburgh University.
Yes,
I visited it the other day. It's magnificently furnished now with carpets all over the place.
Yes, quite a grand building.
the gardens in the centre of the square. We were not allowed to go until we were in the sixth form, and then we were allowed to walk in pairs with gloves and hats.
Suitably ladylike.
But we had no playground
yes.
at all,
yes.
and so any recreation time was spent sitting on your books in the
yes.
hall.
Did you actually board in the house?
No, I didn't board. I boarded with an uncle and aunt,
yes,
and I stayed with them.
So you'd be free from the terrors and bullying of the girls' boarding house?
Oh, no question about that.
Yes.
Oh, there was no question about that. And I made very good friends. I think one of the interesting things was, it was 1932, 1933, at the height of the Depression, and Edinburgh was a very poor
yes.
city in those days, and I had to walk through an area of the very poorest parts of Edinburgh, and I still remember the children with no shoes,
yeah.
and no shoes at all. And yet there never seemed to be any. I never met any reaction from them.
Yes.
We had our school uniforms.
What was your school uniform?
The school uniform was a navy blue gym slip and a white
yes.
black blouse, and a maroon beret. And of course we had various when we played games, but our games field was 5 miles away.
Yes.
So we used to have to go out.
Yes. Did you take part in games yourself? Were you
yes,
keen on games?
Yes, very, very keen. I played
yes.
hockey.
Yes.
And I was very keen on running, on athletics.
Yes.
It was quite an athletic school.
Yes.
Apart as well as, it was. We had a lot of girls. There were 800 girls in the building.
Ooh,
aging from
wow.
a kindergarten department up to sixth form, and a very mm. academic school indeed.
Yes, and so that was an independent school.
An independent school. It was one of the four very famous merchant mm. company schools in Edinburgh.
Mm.
The school itself now is now co-educational with the boys, with George Watson's
yes,
boys' school.
Yes.
And the primary department is in a different part
is
of Edinburgh.
Is it still an independent school?
It's still an independent
yes.
school.
Yes.
And then there were two other schools, Edinburgh Ladies College and Daniel Stewart's College, which
yes.
were in the
same. Don't remember what, any idea what the fees were like in your later years there?
They were minute. Something
really?
Like £50 a year. £50
yes.
a term. £50 a term. And
yes.
yet our academic staff, our staff were very highly qualified.
Yes.
Extraordinary.
Oh, that's yes. nice. What was your favourite subject there?
I think history and English.
Yes.
I loved school. I really enjoyed it, yes. Very, very much indeed.
But I think you must have done to go into the teaching profession when you left.
Yeah, it was an interesting building from the point of view of perhaps one thing. If people have watched the film that was put on ITV, the
Miss Jean Brogan, Maggie Smith.
It was actually filmed in my school.
Really?
And of course, that was that era in which it was.
It brought
back great memories.
Yes, I can imagine.
It was an interesting school. But I enjoyed it very
much.
So
it was a happy time for you?
It was very
much. What would you take? You'd have taken school certificate in England. What did you take as your sort of 16 plus exam?
Well, I took, we took, there was a lower and the highers.
The lowers and the Scottish highers.
I took my lowers, and then in 1939, war broke out, and I was, the school was evacuated. Edinburgh, the German plane crossed the Forth, right at the very beginning, almost in the first week, and the Scottish schools were promptly evacuated, most of a particular school like mine, which was in a very crowded part of Edinburgh, and we had no shelters or anything.
Mm.
And it was evacuated to Perthshire, and my parents felt that there was no point in me being evacuated, so I came back here.
So you didn't actually finish your whole course
no,
at the school?
But then I went to, I took my school certificate in Barrow, and I can't remember where I took it. It must have been
Duke Street.
But I also took a course in shorthand typing at that school.
The Pitman College.
That's right. And I took those. And it was interesting to know that my lower certificate that I had in Edinburgh, I sailed through the school certificate very easily. I didn't take the trick, because that would have meant taking some subjects I hadn't done before.
Yes.
But I always remember. But I sailed through that. And in 1940, I joined the army.
Did you? I didn't realise you'd been in the army.
I was 5 years in the army.
My goodness. So following in your father's footsteps.
Well, my father joined up again. He was called up. He was always on the reserve. And he was called up in 1936.
Yes. He was called up?
Called up.
That's interesting.
Well, he was on the reserve.
Yes.
And he was...
Which regiment was he in?
He was in the King's Own Regiment.
Yes.
But he was particularly
involved... Was he a territorial officer as well?
Yes. He had a territorial decoration. He was particularly involved in defences, and he worked out the defences for Barrow.
Ah.
And also for Chorley, for the munitions for that, before the war.
Mm.
And in 1940 he was in France, but he didn't actually come back at Dunkirk, he came back before.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went into the military police. And
an
interesting thing, the person he did look after was, it was the chap who landed in...
Hess!
He looked
at
me. And I thought it was just, I didn't think it was a real, I thought the family had made it up, but no. A recent book on Hess mentions my father. I was looking after in South Wales.
I didn't realise your father had been a professional soldier.
Yes. Unfortunately, he had poor health. He was gassed in the First World War.
Yes.
In 1915. And then he wasn't very fit in the Second World War and died in 1946.
Yes.
At the end of the war.
How old was he when he died?
47, 48.
No, that really was a very early death.
Very early. My two brothers, one brother was out in Burma, he was with the King's Own Scottish Borderers. And then my younger brother was in the Navy, and he was in destroyers.
Yes.
And he did the Atlantic convoys, and he also did the Russian convoys, and recently has been sent a medal by the Russians. He conducted the ships that brought supplies to Murmansk.
Well, that was nice.
That was nice. So he said you got it.
So when you joined the army, you'd be quite a young girl. You'd be what, 18, 19, something like that.
18, yes.
Just like the Queen.
Yes, very, very much so.
Yes.
And I went down to Salisbury Plain. I joined the army. I was only permitted to do so because I could join what was the local platoon, which was commanded by Dr. Tellett's daughter from Grange. Mm-hmm. Miss Tellett was in charge, and I was permitted to go down to her platoon on Salisbury Plain.
Was this the family's decision?
The family's decision, oh yes, very much so. And I went down there, and although I had, my father had suggested I did shorthand typing, so that at least I would have some skill to offer to the army, I was made an assistant cook. And I peeled...
Well, that's army logic, isn't it?
I peeled onions for nearly a year in an army canteen, but it was very, very interesting on Salisbury Plain, because in 1940, I went to that, I think in about November, October, November, and it was after Dunkirk. It was packed with people, but so did every nationality.
Yes.
People who had come over from Dunkirk. It was a very muddled time. We had quite a lot of raids. We were machine gunned. We had split trenches,
yes,
which we used to go to in the case of a raid.
Yes.
But it was a very, very, very interesting time, and very, very, you felt you were really doing something.
Yes.
And then I was promoted from the onions, and I went to, I was put in the in an office with what I suppose was the beginnings of the SAS, one of the early, certain number of Canadians there. One of the sergeants was, he became headmaster of Blackcombe Primary, Junior School at Millham.
Oh.
So I met him, but I remember him as one of the sergeants.
Yes, yes.
And my job there was supposed to be in the office. I lit the colonel's fire, took the letters about on my old bike, and then that was my main job. Well, they all went out to Dieppe, and most of them didn't come back.
Yes.
So our unit was disbanded, and I came up north, was sent to Hadrian's Camp outside Carlisle, which was unbelievable. Terrible place.
Bad.
Oh, shocking. Absolutely shocking. Have you ever seen fighting women? You don't want to see it again. Newcastle versus Glasgow. It really was. And so I didn't know quite what to do. I was absolutely foxed what to do. And so I went, I applied for a commission. And I got a commission. I went down to Windsor for the training. And then I had a commission. I was sent to North Wales. Training recruits.
So you must have had an early commission in the ATS.
It was quite an early commission, yes. And I was there with the recruits, and we trained a lot of, most of the girls from South Wales, Liverpool, and a lot from Sunderland. They used to come across to Ireland.
Really? Yes.
And I have many funny stories about them, but one of the best, I think, was when the girls had their statutory 2 months training, they were permitted to go home. And of course, our girls went home in their uniforms, but the Southern Ireland girls were not
they
permitted.
They couldn't, no.
But they were allowed to go home in their underclothes. Because mostly they had arrived in a cotton dress and plimsolls across the hour. They came with nothing.
In what they stood up in.
What stood up in.
Yes.
So they went home with their underclothes, and then they deserted when they get over there. Mm. We didn't see them again. But
taking their army underclothes
with them. But it was curious how many of them came back again a few months later. And you'd recognise them and you'd say, well, haven't you been here before? Oh, no, miss.
It's my twin sister. Yes,
so we had a lot of those. But one thing notably, looking back as a teacher, I remember so clearly the girls, particularly from South Wales, very underfed, very almost illiterate. It was extraordinary. I was one of the jobs I had as an officer was to classify them into the jobs they would do.
Yes.
And I was always distressed to find how few of them could really read. Mm. We grumble about the reading today. Mm. And the girls would say, oh yes, but I could read those books we had at school. But they hadn't read.
No transfer.
No, good. No, it was difficult. And particularly the Southern Ireland girls as well. It was it was interesting. It was an interesting job. And then after that, I went up to Durham to the Warrant Officers and NCOs School, where I became a lecturer. I became one of the officers who was training on those, and I trained the Warrant Officers and NCOs until the term, about 6 months before D-Day, when of course the whole country was weren't worrying about training at all. We went out as officers. We were sent out with a group of girls and sent to work anywhere. I was sent down to Chilwell and Nottinghamshire at one south, and we packed screws in a box. Then I went to another place on the east coast and painted boxes which contained aeroplane parts. And I think the most interesting job I had was to navigate some convoys from Newcastle down to the south coast, and you sat in the first of the trucks, and had to navigate the way through. There were special signs because all the road signs were put down. It was blackout.
So the signposts were coded.
They were coded, and you knew exactly which way you went. You had to follow this code, which was an interesting job. Mm. And then after D-Day, they started the training centre again, but that was to train. All the girls, of course, thought they would, immediately the war was won, would be allowed to go home, and of course they weren't.
Didn't happen like that, did it?
We had to occupy people. And one of the jobs I did was to, I suppose you would call it environmental studies today. I did an environmental study of Durham, where it was, Durham City. Mm-hmm. And I took the girls around housing estates and the character and various things, their social studies. And we went down a coal mine, a very early one of the coal mines in there. Very primitive today. Yes. But it was a very interesting course. And then I remember being called into the office, the commanding officer, and said, there are representatives from the Minister of Education here looking for future teachers. And they asked me if I'd be interested. So I went off to Emergency College and became a teacher.
And lived happily ever after.
Yes. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Yes.
Yes.
It wasn't very easy. I went to the very first Emergency College.
Where was your college?
Bognor Regis.
Was it an old established college, or was it simply established for the
It was an army
particular
camp.
Task?
It was an army camp,
yes.
And the Canadian Army walked out and we walked in.
Yes.
And we had barrack rooms, the old army biscuits instead of mattresses.
Yes.
We kept our books in the old lockers, and we studied. They were barrack rooms, so there were 8 teachers in a room, and we studied our... We did that.
And how many of you were on your course?
I can't remember exactly. One of the interested...
Dozens
or
scores?
No, there were about 100, 150, I should think.
Yes.
The interesting group was the ex-Japanese prisoners of war.
Yes.
And they...
Was it all ladies or was it mixed?
No, mixed.
Yes.
And we... the inhabitants of Bognor Regis felt that this was very disgraceful.
Well, 1946-47, I guess so.
Yes, they thought it was disgraceful we should be trained together. Well, as I say, all of us practically had been. We were mostly commissioned officers in the services. We were all ex-service. But the Japanese prisoners of war were very interesting because they sat at one table and were fed on, as you can imagine, they had the most magnificent meals. And we were on... Civilian rations for the first time, and army rations were very good, and I really realised what civilian rations had been.
So civilian rations were a come down for you?
Oh, terrible. We were very, very hungry, and we went, we got a grant, of course our training was paid for, but we got a small grant.
An FETS grant, if I remember.
Yes, that's
Further Education Training Scheme. Yes, yes. I missed that by about 3 months.
It was a very small grant. It didn't last long, and so I can remember fish and chips when it first arrived, and cups of tea and biscuits when we
at the end of it.
We were very hungry. I can remember that was very hungry, and it was interesting because the South Coast then, I had two, in that year, it was a year's course, we had five, teaching practices.
Five in a year?
Yeah, we had...
My goodness.
We really had to go in. We went in straight away and we really trained.
Yeah.
Our whole training was based on
practical experience. Yes, yes.
And I remember my first one was in a school in Brighton, and the squalor and the poverty was unbelievable.
Yes.
Which you could see. My later one, I remember, it was... there was one with in a very remote village school where the teacher was still using slates. It was interesting. Mm. Yeah.
I remember using slates at school as a child.
Yes.
And I enjoyed it.
I used slates up here when I first came up here to teach in some of the...
You could make a very irritating squeak
if
you put your pencil the wrong way.
Yes. Well, now I do, I go around. I have for some years given talks about education, rural education, and you know, I call it slates to computers. Because
yes, I think I heard you speak at the Sir Optimist dinner on this.
Yeah,
it was quite fascinating.
Having been
at both ends as a consumer and at the other end as a distributor of these things.
Yes, and it was interesting to go and now the schools ask me to go, and I very often they do anything on education, I talk about them. I have a collection of slates and slate pencils.
That's really quite a fascinating history. So you were more or less recruited into teaching by the army.
Yes, I think one really didn't have a lot of choice. My father was dying.
Mm.
There was no money, my elder brother had been. He hadn't been wounded, but he was very sent home from Burma. He was fighting right through Burma, and he'd been very seriously ill with the dysentery and scroo and all the other horrible diseases. He came home and was ill. And my young brother, he was in the Navy. But so there were three of us, and my young sister, to be thought of.
Yes.
She was coming up to...
And it was regarded as a safe job in those days, wasn't it?
It was very much a safe job to do.
You won't make a fortune, but you'll never be out of a
job. Oh, no. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed teaching very much. I knew I liked teaching when I was teaching the recruits and the NCOs and the Army.
What sort of... How many people didn't stay the course for one reason or another from your emergency training college?
We were weeded out very quickly.
Practically
the first or second, we weeded out very quickly.
Mm.
And to a certain extent, I suppose, we were all, although our qualifications were not as high as today, we were pretty well
maturity, which
helped a lot.
Yes
that. In fact, I remember the principal writing to me afterwards, and within, I think, 10 years, 50, I think nearly 80% of our course were head teachers.
Yes.
I was the first emergency trained head teacher up here in this area.
Mm.
Oh, quite a lot afterwards, but I was the first.
Yes, I think it was in many ways a creaming of the talent that was available, this emergency teaching scheme. Vic Gray was an emergency trained chap, and he was a very good headmaster at Lowell.
Very, very good. The headmaster at Grange was he was also.
Which one was that?
His name. The one he's retired now. Still
not living. Grundy.
Grundy, yes.
Was he an emergency trained? I didn't think he was old enough.
Yes, and the sergeant who was the sergeant I worked with in on Salisbury Plain. He was emergency trained and became the head teacher at Millamer. He was the head teacher at
What was his name?
I can't remember his name now.
Blackcomb.
And it was, I think we had the experience. You certainly had the experience of
And you had command, management.
Oh, yes.
Which is regarded as a dirty word by many students and young people now.
Oh, yes.
At Heversham we had a very good math student who had hopeless discipline because he said... No, I think it is morally wrong to command other people and tell them what to do.
Mm.
Couldn't understand. He lasted 1 year.
Yes. Well, I think we learnt it, certainly when I was commissioned in the ATS. The principle was you never punished. The girls were never brought in for punishment. You had to handle a situation and not let a situation arise. And you managed to deal with a whole lot of problems that used to come up. But I can remember in most cases, if a girl was put on a charge, it was your fault.
Yes, yes.
To have happened. So yes. You had to see that the organisation was good.
Yes.
There wasn't the situation where people could get into trouble.
Yes.
And I think this happened. It was a great help in teaching.
Yes, it's people management.
It's people management, and also whatever you say in rural schools, particularly as a head teacher in a rural school, you've got a great deal of community management
yes,
as well,
yes.
which you have to deal with.
Backing.
Yeah. I mean, I am very interested now when I see how much involvement the community has within the school, the parents, and the teachers are coping with this marvellously nowadays.
Yes.
But when I went to be a head teacher immediately when I first went to teach, parents were excluded. They weren't part of the situation at all. There was enormous respect for teachers, but you were a race apart.
Yes, that's how.
And now, of course, it's a very different situation.
Yes.
But it's interesting, and I think a lot of our teachers today are learning a great deal about man management.
Mm.
They're managing, particularly the heads today.
Well, since 1956, 57, 58, you've had a race of men and women who don't know what service life is.
No.
That's a whole generation now, isn't it?
And
I think learning at 18.
Yes, and I do think today, I think it's a pity what is called discipline today. It's not discipline, it's self-control and learning to work in with other people.
Respect.
Respect.
Yeah.
And a responsibility, which a lot of our young people don't have.
Yes.
They think they're entitled to everything.
Yes.
And
right
they're trying to do it.
Yes.
But it's interesting. No.
Can I go back to your holidays when you were when you had a governess? What were the school holidays like, Alex? If you had your own group of friends who also had governesses, and you had this. Did you have 4, 5, 6 weeks of no governess while she took her annual holiday?
Yes, we did that. We had that.
So I imagine that would be a time of immense freedom.
Immense freedom.
Yes.
Yes. We had a lot of, as I say, my father, although we had a governess and we went away to school, my parents were not at all rich. We had very little money. And especially when my father started up with the market garden, during the Depression and the early 30s, it was a very difficult time altogether because nobody had any money to buy. Mm. I can remember crates of tomatoes going on the train from Cork Station and being returned because they couldn't sell them
to
Manchester.
So
money was very scarce. My mother
that's
was
a whole year's crop.
Yes, and my mother was an expert cook. She kept a pig. Mm-hmm. She kept pigs and chickens and turkeys, and we fed well, but there was no spare money at all.
Yeah. Did you have to help around the house as children?
Oh yes, a lot.
Did you all have your set jobs, or did you get your orders each day, or what?
We had certain responsibilities, I think, more than anything else. It was certainly not a house where the girls did everything. Well, I was the only girl. My sister is 10 years younger than I am. But in those days, the boys had to do as much as I did, which was a good idea. But it was interesting on those points. But the holidays were lovely, and as I say, my father didn't have a car, and many of my friends' parents did have a car, which rather limited us. But we were expert on our bikes.
How did he get his stuff to Cork Station? Just with a handcart?
Well, the handcart.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
And they would go off on the train.
Yeah.
And would sell and. I suppose there was a certain amount of, I suppose to a certain extent, the local fishermen who were doing the hawking as well in Flintborough. I think they probably took quite a lot of his stuff then.
Hawked it around.
Well, most of them stood on the markets at Kendal.
And they had a fair old territory. They went up as far as Coniston and Rathdale,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, and then they had the horse and carts that went around, yes, and they stood on the markets. Yes. And they stood on the markets at Barrow as well as Kendal, and I could still remember them coming home, and they used to stop, to come off the train. I don't think very much money ever came home, actually, because they would have a stop in the pub at Kendal and Barrow, and then they would stop at the station hotel, which was at the bottom of the drive of our house. And I could see their hand carts tipped up. Well, they used to put their produce on the carts and stand on the markets, and then they came home empty, you see.
Bring their hand carts on the train?
Yes, they did.
In the guard's van.
One of our other great places of interest was the station, and we used to go down there and sit in the station, and we knew all the porters, and one a great excitement, of course, was to be allowed to go into the signal box. We knew the signal box, the man very well. We used to help with the signals. It was extremely...
A bit like the railway children.
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, we were very free to do a lot of things.
Yes.
And it was one of those... And then when we did go out with friends, we played tennis, and we played games with them, with the friends that we had in the houses round about. But it was...
How did church and Sunday school figure in your experience?
Well, my uncle was vicar of Flintborough from 1911 till 1926.
Yes.
He went out to France as a padre, and I've just recently been reading his diary. That he wrote.
You've got it?
I've got it. At present, I was just getting it ready to send to a great niece of mine who was doing A-level history, and one of her projects she's doing...
Was he a King's Own man as well?
No, yes, he was, yes, yeah. And he was in there. And he's very interesting, a terribly interesting diary,
yes,
of a padre.
Yes.
He was right through the Somme.
Yes.
Right in that area.
Yes.
A very interesting diary altogether. But, and of course, when he came back, and we went to church finally, of course, when we came to live in Flintborough, he was still there as vicar. My mother was a very strict Scot. Mm-hmm. Had been brought up in the Presbyterian Church.
Yes.
Somehow or other, she had been confirmed when she became an Anglican, rather reluctantly, I think. She was quite happy with my uncle. But he was replaced when he left. He was a vicar who was a very high church persuasion. Mm. And there was much incest and vowing and so forth.
Mm. Mm.
My mother disapproved.
Anglo-Catholics.
Bailing their head. And my mother used to use us as an excuse, so she didn't sit through the whole service. So we were always taken out before the sermon. And then, when we were too old to be taken out before the sermon, she used to disappear. And we always wondered what could be the excuse, and we were always there, well, the rice pudding was burning, or something like this. But my mother didn't agree. But yeah, of course, after he left, and we had a much more middle of the road, because she was always very...
So it was a regular part of your family life?
Yes, we went regularly to church on Sunday. My father was a sidesman in the church and involved he was on the church council. Mm. I always remember very clearly when I went to Edinburgh, and I was about 13, and it was decided that I should be confirmed and I should have my preparation in Edinburgh with a friend of my uncle's who was vicar of the large church at the west end of Edinburgh, the big church, I think it's St. John's. And I was prepared on Saturday mornings for my confirmation with another girl. And by doing so, I missed my place in the hockey team. So I'm afraid I was a very reluctant member of the Church of England then. But and actually, as I grew up in Edinburgh, my uncle and aunt went to the local Church of Scotland, and I joined their guide company and the youth club. We had a very, very lively minister. Mm. He became padre to the 51st Highland Division and was taken prisoner when they were taken prisoner in 1940. Mm. And he was very good with us all. I learned a great deal. So the Church of Scotland figured very strongly in my early education. And I still have a great deal, feel a great sympathy with the Church of Scotland. But it was interesting. The Anglican Church, no way, because after I was confirmed, I had to go to communion once a month, and I had to cycle 3 miles to church, and no one on any count spoke to me. Absolutely lonely girl.
Like a cold shower.
Cold shower. Yes. And the difference between a lively a church that the Church of Scotland presented was quite a contrast as well. But that was the beginning of my interest in Girl Guides, because I was a member of... I joined the Girl Guides in Edinburgh at, I suppose, about 13, and